Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. If you are new to the show, normally on Mondays and Thursdays, I talk with either veterans about their civilian career path, what they do, how they got there, and advice on others seeking to do the same. Or I meet with world-class experts who can share knowledge about a skill or a trait that will help military veterans in their civilian career. You've arrived, if you're listening to this right now, to one of our Saturday episodes, which are called Behind Beyond the Uniform. These are intended to be much more informal, unscripted, one-way conversations about professional issues up front, and then in the party in the back, some personal items. And so we will dive in. I've got a bunch of professional items and a couple personal items as well, and feel free to stick around for however much of this serves you. But first is an announcement I'm very excited about. Coming up on Monday is our 300th episode, and I sat down with Steve Bain, my right-hand man, yesterday on Thursday. I'm recording this right now on Friday. Sat down on Thursday to record a first-of-kind episode for us, which is saying something in 300 episodes. So tune in on Monday. It's definitely a deviation from the normal, a little bit more of a variety show, but excited to get this out there. And also, we talk so much on the show about getting out of your comfort zone. The artwork for Monday's episode is way outside of my comfort zone. And if I hadn't heard from so many guests the importance of being out of your comfort zone, I would have not done it. But our team came up with it, and we are going with it. So keep an eye out for that artwork. So a couple professional thoughts, and I had two interviews this week that won't go live till October, but the first one I just wrapped up ago, minutes ago, was with a gentleman named Tyler Johnston. And before the interview even wrapped up, I was making plans to have him back on the show and even set up a call with me and Steve to just chat about overall strategy for Beyond the Uniform. A goldmine of information. And the thing that you need to know about Tyler, because this won't air until October 7th, but a lot of what we dive into is his unique career path where pretty early on, you know, when he left the Marine Corps, he put two stakes in the ground. And the first one was around the functional role of sales, and the second one was around the industry of energy. I really appreciate, he talks about how his values drove that decision on the industry, where he and his wife talked about what they wanted to do, and they were most passionate about healthcare and about energy. They felt like those are two industries that will have a big impact on our species in the future. And so she went into healthcare and he went into energy. And so I thought that was a great model. But starting with sales, I know we talk about this sometimes on the show. I do think that sales gets a bad rap in the military. And one of the things I loved about Tyler is that when I asked him to explain what he does for a living, he described it as entertaining people, which is not exactly what you think of when you think of sales. But when you hear about his experience, his nearly decade of experience in sales, you start to realize how true this is. What I also appreciated about this interview is hearing him with tactical precision describe why veterans are so well suited to sales. And he goes line by line through his experience in the military and directly translates it to sales in a way that I think is going to give you a really fresh perspective on why you should consider sales, even if you don't think you're well suited for it, or you think that it's slimy or whatever else you're telling yourself is a reason why you shouldn't go into it. What stands out to me, and this is funny because I'd planned on talking about this in the personal section at the end of this episode, but we spent a little bit of time talking about mastery, and that's something I appreciate about Tyler's experience, is the mastery that he's brought to this functional skill set of sales. And as you hear about his story, where he worked at Siemens and then at General Electric, and then at a company called NRG, and then he realizes he needs more finance experience, so he goes and gets his MBA. You really get the vision of someone who is picking up different tools, adding different skills, honing areas where they're weak, and over the course of a decade, really has an arsenal of well-developed tools, very well-cultivated skills, and even a well-defined network to make him extremely efficient in what he's doing. And we'll talk about that more at the end. But I love this thought of that patience, of diving in, learning, committing to a trade, and over the course of years and years and years, adding where you're deficient, shoring up where you need to be strengthened, and at the end of the day, you're left with just an incredible toolkit with which you can do some tremendous damage in a good way. So I love that thought of mastery. I also appreciated, in the spirit of getting out of one's comfort zone, the unique way at which he ended up getting his MBA through Columbia's executive program. And it was, you know, after the course of 4 or 5 years in sales, starting to realize where he needed support, which was much more around the finance side of things. And the way that he ended up choosing his MBA program was, he was based in Houston at the time, working at General Electric. He realized that he was around a lot of operations people. He was around a lot of people very similar to him. And that if he pursued an MBA program in the Houston area, it would likely double down on those things that he already had. But he wanted diversity. He wanted to be around people very different from him. He wanted to be out of his comfort zone. And so he chose to go to Columbia in New York, which entailed every other week, 52 times a year, flying out to, or maybe 52 times during the course of the two-year program, flying out to New York, staying on his friend from the military's couch who was going to the full-time program at Columbia, learning on the weekends, learning on nights, flying back, applying that at General Electric. And that's not normally the path that one hears about with an MBA. Certainly the opposite of my experience of going straight from the military into grad school. But I really appreciated the perspective and the wisdom he brought that to that decision of pursuing an MBA for very unique reasons. And I say that because I think, you know, as someone with an MBA, it can be a little bit more of a generic catch-all, fix-all solution degree. But I think that he, again, applied tactical precision into why this degree was important for him, and I really appreciated that. Lastly, you know, Tyler has a career in sales all through energy, and he takes a year out to join a company that you've heard about on the show before called Shift.org. It's a tech startup that I would probably classify in the HR, human resources industry, not in the energy industry. And the thing that I appreciated about that was the thought of collecting data points. I don't know if this is how he approached the decision, but I kind of superimpose on this thought of getting diversity of data points, saying I've worked in big companies throughout my career. I've worked in the energy industry. Let me wildly mix things up, get experience still within sales, but within a 25-person technology startup within the human resources space in San Francisco. So much diversity that he hadn't had before. And in his case, he ended up going back to energy, back to larger companies. But it's a great way, you know, at that point, he was probably 7 or 8 years into his career. It was a great way for him to just kind of test some hypotheses and ensure that he was continuing in the path that was right for him and his family. So that'll be episode 313, airing October 7th. Really teasing this one out, making you wait for that one. But fantastic interview, and actually connecting with him in the next week, him and Steve, to just talk strategy for Beyond the Uniform, because I was that fired up from his perspective and knowledge. The interview that I did on Monday that'll be out end of September is with Chris Hogan. Chris isn't a veteran. He's in that class of people where he has millions of listens to his own podcast, The Chris Hogan Show. He is an expert on finance. He helps people get financial security. Many times on his shows, he has military veterans, and he's helping them come up with a game plan to gain control of their finances and build towards financial security. Loved our conversation. It was a quick 30-minute one. It is worth in advance to the show listening to his podcast, The Chris Hogan Show, if you have a chance, if you want extra credit, if you want a gold star on your Beyond the Uniform report card, you can listen to the Chris Hogan Show prior to that airing, and we just cover a lot of ground. But what you'll know if you've listened to more than one of these episodes is finances plays a big role in your autonomy and your ability to find a career path uniquely suited to who you are. And so the degree to which you have mastery of your finances, the degree to which you have built up your savings, that gives you more time when you leave the military, when you leave your fifth job after the military. It continues to give you freedom to take the time to find the next career move that's uniquely suited to you. So keep an eye out for that one. That's all I've got on the professional front. A few personal items, just kind of, you know, going off of five words on a post-it note, so not tremendously well thought out. One thing I just wanted to share is there's an author, David Data. He wrote a book called The Way of the Superior Man. It is a little bit controversial. I particularly like it. I did not like it when I first read it. I've come to appreciate it more. But I do this year-long men's program. He was actually the host of one of our weekly get-togethers a couple weeks ago. And one of the things he shared kind of stuck with me, and it relates to the point I was talking about around mastery. And what he had said in response to one of the guys in our group was, you know, everyone today is just not, the impression I got is like, you know, everyone today is just like trying to spout their knowledge. They're shouting on Instagram, they're shouting on Facebook, and they're kind of coming with half-baked ideas. They're trying to get content out quickly. They're trying to gain an audience. They're trying to hack their way into a fortune. And the result is a lot of content out there that is low quality, that is half-baked, that isn't really true mastery. And what he said to this individual in our group is like, I'm hearing you want to write a book. I would challenge you, don't write a book until the world is pulling it out of your hands. Like the world is demanding that from you. And it's something that kind of resonated with me because, you know, sometimes I look around and I see on Facebook that everyone is publishing their own book, everyone's publishing their own blog, or God forbid, their own podcast. You know, and there's this thought that we all need to be YouTube celebrities and we all need to be cultivating our personal brand and all these things. And I'm not speaking against that at all. Obviously, you're listening to this on my own podcast. I think that there are different needs to be met by doing all of these things. And maybe all of them will be right for you and where you're at right now. But for me, this thought of mastery really has caused me to take a step back and view things more through a decade-long perspective. You know, even with Beyond the Uniform, I've thought before of like, oh, I've done 300 of these interviews. Maybe I should write a book. But I kind of go back to what David said, which is like, man, until the world is pulling this out of you, until, you know, I don't intend to write a Beyond the Uniform book, but in this case, it'd be like until people are writing and saying, like, we need a book from you, until publishers are coming and saying, hey, we really need you to do this, until that clear sign comes, it's like, shut up and get to work. Get really good. It's that Cal Newport, so good they can't ignore you perspective of like, just put your head down and get really effing good. You know, build up a skill set over the course of 10 years rather than, you know, the book that I would write today is dramatically different than if I'm doing this for 10 years and have thousands of interviews. What a greater perspective there'll be. And again, I'm not saying this is right for everyone and for every situation. Obviously, there are times when you need to hustle, when you need to make things happen, when you need to find those connections. And I'm not dissuading you from that, but I'm offering you a counterpoint that I think does not get nearly the airtime. I don't think it's nearly as sexy. The newsletter pop-up on the men's group. I do this men's program through a guy named John Wineland. And if you go to johnwineland.com, one of the things that drew me to this program is the little newsletter pop-up says, fuck hacking, go deep. Fuck hacking, go deep. And I love that. I think that the world is hungering for depth. It is craving true mastery. And again, Cal Newport in his book, So Good They Can't Ignore You, he talks about how really weighty missions, how really worthwhile causes, how really incredible contributions to any field in the world today generally comes when someone has obtained mastery. If you're in the world of cancer research, it's unlikely, not impossible, unlikely that the breakthrough is going to come to the person who hasn't even gone to medical school yet. Rather, the people who are pushing the envelope, who are on the tip of the spear of advancing that career, are the people or body of research, are the people who went to med school, have worked in oncology for multiple decades, have been reading and learning and studying and growing, and after 20, 30 years, they find themselves on the tip of the spear, expanding the empire, pushing things further. And that may not connect with you, but where I'm at in life right now, that excites me of thinking of like, man, I honestly, even having done 300 of these interviews, I don't think there's a single area in my life where I could claim mastery. Especially having done startups for so long, I've dabbled in so many different things. But the thought of starting to pick battles, starting to pick areas that I want to cultivate mastery, that really excites me. And I also get excited by the patient perspective. And I'm 39. It's not like I'm straight out of the military at this point. You know, as a 39-year-old thinking, you know, I want to find something to devote the next decade to. I really want to cultivate expertise. I really want to make sure that when I speak, I have something unique to say, something well formulated, something the world hasn't seen before, something that is influenced by the thousands of years of people before me. That's what I want. And obviously, I'm sharing my thoughts right now. I think that Beyond the Uniform or these Saturday episodes is a different purpose for me right now. But when I think of the bulk of what I want to do with my life, that's one of the things I'm actively thinking about. And I wanted to share that with listeners in case that resonates. And the one last thing I'll say here, you know, part of my bias that's flavoring this is I feel like when I got out of the Navy and I went to business school, I do feel like in retrospect, I was in a rush to get somewhere. I was in a rush to either build a career or to build wealth. And if I were to advise myself now with that hindsight, it would be to relax a little bit, to realize that, you know, your fortune might not be made, your fulfillment might not be made, your brand might not be made in the first 2, 4, 8 years of your career. That might be coming 20 years from now. And if you just kind of take a deep breath and lean back and think, you know, if you're listening to this and you're 25, maybe what you're doing that's going to change the world occurs when you're 45. And just temporarily adopting that mindset, like how does that change your decisions? Maybe it's not a rush to get this job. Maybe it's saying, like Tyler said in his interview, like, okay, got this skill set. Well, not really well-rounded in finance. I think that's what I'm going to need in the future. Let me devote 2 years to getting good at that. Okay, now I need to figure out what it's like to lead a sales team in a small organization. Let me join a startup for a year. And just starting to think of these as little lily pads that over the time you hop from one to the next, you gain perspective and wisdom. That influences where you hop next. And after a while, you've covered a tremendous amount of ground rather than feeling like you got to do this all in one leap. All right, that horse sufficiently beaten to death? Great. So let's move on to the next one. This comes from as that same men's group. We do weekly video calls, and then we meet up occasionally in person as well. One of the themes that I've noticed from my own experience and seeing the experience of others is the power of, and the term I'll use is being seen, but the power of being seen by others for who we are. And if you listen to my interview with Dr. Robert Glover, he wrote a book called No More Mr. Nice Guy. You can search for that on our website. You'll find that really, really, you know, one of the most influential books I've read in the last 10 years. One of the things that he talks about is many of us today would identify as a nice guy. We want everyone to like us. We want to be that nice guy with no rough edges that gets along with everyone, who's never angry. And my experience with that, and I think his observation in the book as well, is it doesn't exist. You know, we all have ugly sides. We all make mistakes. We all have sides that are darker and areas that we're less proud of ourselves. And I think he makes a great argument in the book for the appeal of that, how we're actually drawn to people who are flawed. We're drawn to people who are truly three-dimensional, not these two-dimensional, Instagram-perfect, everything is great images, but rather we're attracted to people who are vulnerable, who share about their weaknesses, about their struggles. And it's something I've seen in this men's group and the one that I was at last night that I go to every other Thursday is the power when someone has the courage with a safe group of people to open up about something that they're struggling with. You know, the case I'm thinking of was one of the guys in our group on Wednesday was sharing about rage, and he literally got in an argument with his wife and took her guitar and smashed it over his head and had to go to the emergency room. And, you know, I'm just putting myself in his shoes. If I did that, it would take a tremendous amount of courage for me to ever share that with anyone. I would be so embarrassed by that, so embarrassed by my rage, my anger, my impulsiveness, my little kid behavior of stomping on the ground and doing something stupid like that, and even, you know, harming myself. I think I would tuck that away and share that only with a few people. And the impact when I hear him share that, when I hear him open up about that and talk about that experience, first of all, I feel a lot more connected to him. I see him as a human being who is both good and bad and struggling and succeeding, and it just makes him a more three-dimensional person to whom I can relate. I think of it in terms of, like, if you know the way dishwashers work, if there's dirt on a dish, oftentimes the detergent can actually clean better. When there's that debris and that residue, it actually provides more surface area for the detergent to cling to, and it can be a deeper clean. And sometimes I think of that with people as well, that when we have these blotches and these blemishes and these splotches and we're honest, I think people can be attracted to that because there's actually something to cling on to. There's that abrasive edge that makes them more trustworthy. But on the flip side, I know from him sharing, and I know from my own experience when I've opened up with these men's groups about things that I struggle with, or even on the podcast, things that I have been vulnerable with, there is a tremendous power in being seen by others as we are, in being truly seen, not for the part, the pretty shiny part of ourselves that we like to expose to the world, but our whole self, the bits that aren't shiny, the bits that aren't pretty and clean, but being seen completely as a human being with both our faults and our strengths. There's a tremendous value in that. And for those of you in a relationship, I think that's one of the things that makes relationships so great, is to be with someone and be around someone as a contrast that sees you at your lowest moments. Hint, hint, at your moments of waking up when your son wakes up at, you know, 3 a.m. and you're not your best self. Thank you, Rebecca, for your patience. There's a power in that in relationship. But I would say, too, if you're able to cultivate groups like, you know, I do with these men's groups, or maybe it's a church group for you, or maybe it's a book club. I don't know what the vehicle will be for you. But if you find those safe groups of people, people you trust, I'm not talking about sharing this with the world, but I'm talking about sharing this with people you trust, there can be a tremendous power in being seen in who you are, and then also a tremendous power for others to see you and to recognize that very often the struggle that you're sharing, they have as well. And there can be a liberation in them realizing they're not alone through the courage of you being vulnerable. All right. Step off that soapbox. Last one, and this one's a little bit less formed, but it's the concept of having your heart open. And I share it because the guy that leads my Thursday night men's group shared this last night, and it was very similar to a lot of the work that I'm doing with my other year-long men's group. And the premise is, you know, I think this is true for all of us. I think the context was more for men who I think probably struggle with this perhaps slightly more than women, just to make generalizations, so I can piss people off with that. But the thought of like how easy it is, I'll be specific for me, how easy it is in a relationship to, again, these terms might not land for you, but the ones that work for me is the thought of my heart closing or the thought of collapsing. So Rebecca, my wife, you know, gets upset about the way that I've loaded the dishwasher and she gives me instruction on how to do it. My natural response is to kind of shut down. And that can take a couple different forms. My heart closes and I get angry at her and lash out. My heart closes and I just stand there, but I just shut down. I'm no longer actually open to the dialogue. Or, you know, for me, I'll kind of shut down and essentially run away, of like find a reason to get out of the situation, almost like the flight in fight or flight. But it all kind of emanates from the same thing, which is this, you know, again, the heart that I, the phrase that I would use is your heart closing or yourself collapsing. And I'm becoming more and more aware through my experience and hearing these experiences of others, how much that closure adversely affects relationships that we care about, how that kind of severs and cuts off this unseen connection, in this case between my wife and I, but it occurs in friendships, it occurs in business relationships, this experience of having your heart close. And so the phrase that the guy that leads our men's group used is, I think the way he had explained it was straight back, heart open. And that's been the phrase that he uses, that, you know, usually these things are a little bit more pronounced in relationship, but in his case with his wife, when they get into conflict, he tells himself, okay, straight back, let me stand up, let me ground, let me feel the ground, let me feel the ground underneath me, let me feel my body, let me stay in my body instead of retreating into my head, and let me really deliberately focus on keeping my heart open, breathing into my heart, feeling open and in connection. And that's not to say that you're avoiding the anger. That's not to say that you're staying in conversation even. That's not to say that you're not setting boundaries, like you're not just being trampled over. But if you experiment with this, my experience, I think you'll find this to be true, you can take the same action with your heart open versus your heart closed, and the impact of it is very different. You know, if I can find a way to stay in my body, you know, feel my body, breathe in, feel the breath in my belly, feel the ground beneath me, feel my legs on the ground, and feel my heart open. And from that place, I say, hey, Rebecca, I'm hearing you want to give me advice on loading the dishwasher. I'm not in a good spot for that right now. Let's connect tonight and we can talk about it. That is a very different experience, I would argue, for Rebecca, than when I have my heart closed, I'm in my head, I feel my adrenaline going, I feel like I'm attacked, I've got a little bit of tunnel vision, I've got this fight or flight thing going on. And I could say the exact same thing. My guess is the way I'm saying it is energetically going to be very different. There's going to be a lot of anger behind it. My face is going to be scrunched up. My body's going to be tense. And she is going to really, you know, they say so much of body language is not in the words, but the way we communicate. What it's like 90% is the way we communicate. She's going to pick up on that. That's going to land dramatically different for her than that first case. And this is, you know, this is honestly a huge chunk of the work that I'm doing with this men's group. He calls it embodied men's leadership training, but it's literally trying to build that leadership muscle from a position of being open with your heart and being grounded in your body. And if I can paint a picture, like one of the exercises we do, and we do this on Zoom video, we do this together, it's some variant of this, but we'll very often be paired up with another man. We'll be standing across them, maybe arm's length across. We'll get into a horse stance, so your legs are parallel, your knees are bent, so your like quads are engaged, you're feeling your quads. And we'll take a different pose, but just, you know, picture hugging a tree, so your arms are out parallel to the ground in front of you. And we'll hold that pose while looking at the man across from us for like 10 minutes. Like to the point where your legs are quivering, your arms are freaking burning. And, you know, he is kind of coaching you through this process. But a lot of it, I know this may sound strange, a lot of it, you know, is rather than clamping down, right? If you run a race and you've kind of like dug deep and it's like that the fuck it vibe of like clenching your teeth and I'm going to gut through this, it's actually trying to activate a different part of us, which is instead of clamping down and closing and gritting our teeth and powering through, can we keep our heart open? Can you keep eye contact with the man across from you? Can you let him see you in pain and in suffering? Can you keep that connection? And can you find a place to pull from internally that is a place from heart openness, from feeling the ground, from feeling your body, from feeling the pain, not ignoring it, but actually keeping your heart open amidst that pain? And the way that I found this translates is that, you know, when Rebecca is, you know, what I view as coming at me, when she's angry, when she's maybe raging or sad or in despair or helpless, all of these things that trigger me that have, you know, almost a physical reaction, it's the same as being in pain for me to see her being in pain. Rather than having my habitual response be to shut down, to close, to cut myself off from that pain, to escape from that pain and discomfort, rather, you know, because I've done this practicing, can I stand there? Can I feel my legs? Can I feel my breath? Can I see her suffering and stay in connection with her? Keep my heart open. Stay open. And I'm not great at this. I've done a shitload of practicing and still fall and falter all the time. But I found that those moments where I'm able to slow things down, realize like, okay, I'm starting to get triggered by this. It doesn't have to be my wife. It could be an angry customer who's raging at me. It could be some dude who's honking at me when I'm driving. It could be someone that I'm interacting with in public that's just being a dick. You know, the same thing. Like, rather than like getting to the place where I sever all connection to those around me, where I close my heart, where I tense my body, where I slip into my head, where I get into some sort of story and react from that spot, can I stay grounded, connected to the earth, breathing into my belly, connected to my heart, sensing my heart open, and then choose the action from that spot? And I just want to accentuate one last time, like this is not about avoidance. From that spot, I may be very forceful with someone like, hey man, the way that you're talking to me does not work. Like, I'm not open to that. And so if we're going to have this conversation, you need to change your tone right now. Like, that might be the right response. And I know for me that me saying those words with my heart open versus my heart closed, it's dramatically different. Like, the impact of it is very, very different. It would feel different for the person I'm saying that to. Same thing with you know, relationship, any of these cases. Like, it's not to say that you're not setting boundaries. It's not to say that you're not being angry. I would even say that like open-hearted anger is very different than closed-hearted, disconnected anger. So I know this is one part soapbox and one part very theoretical and may not land for you, may resonate with some, not with others, but I wanted to share that. It's something that's just kind of reoccurring in my life right now in different settings, and I think that there's a real power there, and I hope that this plants the seed for you to maybe experiment with that of whatever form it takes for you. But the next time you're in conflict or you feel yourself reacting, to center, feel into it, keep your heart open, and act from that spot and experiment and see what the impact is for the person you're dealing with. Maybe none, maybe a big one, but it's worth doing as an exercise. So that's all for today. I'll be back on Monday with episode 300. Be sure to check it out. Stellar lineup for the rest of August. I'll be doing the sneak peek for our September lineup, which is just the bar keeps on being raised higher and higher with the guests we're having on the show. Excited for September. Great episodes ahead. Traveling next week. May or may not have an episode next Saturday, but if so, I hope to see you there. Have a great week.